This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Harvard's latest Christian fellowship is placed on probation after defunded, and they were placed on probation and defunded after simply exercising their religious right. The group, Harvard College Faith and Action, asked one of its student leaders to step down after revealing she was in a same-sex relationship. The university was not happy about the group's move, labeling them, quote, intolerant.
Our next guest calls out Harvard for its, quote, intolerance in a new op-ed writing. The more the liberal state and liberal institutions squeeze Orthodox believers, the harder it becomes to imagine liberalism returning to some prior state, to the days when liberalism not only accommodated, but even encouraged traditional morality and belief.
So, is Harvard waging war on Christianity? Here to weigh in, senior writer for commentary and author of that op-ed, Sohrab Ahmari. Thank you, Sohrab, for being here.
Pleasure.
So for me, this is not an issue about same-sex marriage or same-sex relationships. It's about religious organizations being able to adhere to their beliefs freely in a free society. But in this particular case, they chose to make a decision based on their faith, and as a result, were punished by the university.
That's exactly right. Look, Harvard is a private institution. It's not bound by the First Amendment. Nevertheless, it puts itself forward as an institution where there is free inquiry and free speech, and a component of that is freedom of association, which means that groups, depending on their religious faith or other political views, can choose who their leadership should be. So it's a violation of that principle, which still applies, I think, at Harvard, for Harvard to be an institution where freedom matters. And it's just part of a bigger pattern where you begin to question whether we really still live in a free society. I mean, if you hold up a checklist, you know, we still have competitive elections, thank God. We still have a free and robust press, thank God. But in many areas of life, particularly in culture, entertainment, journalism, and academia especially, it doesn't feel that way. People feel there's this kind of pervasive low-grade pressure that you have to conform your opinions to the latest liberal orthodoxy, which, by the way, is shifting every minute.
Right, that whether or not religious liberty still exists. So we're getting a statement from the school. This is a statement from the undergraduate council member who says, I think this, and as it's called, about solidarity, I think this is an important symbolic move to show that we, as the elected representatives of the student body, will not tolerate discrimination.
Well, there's no discrimination involved here. I mean, within our broader society and at Harvard, there are all sorts of protections for gays and lesbians and other sexual minorities. This is about the right of a particular group to uphold its faith beliefs. And I think this is very dangerous because at some point you get to a situation where people don't feel like they can uphold their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Liberalism no longer asks that you give them rights or you give them recognition. They've already won all the rights and recognitions. We have gay marriage. We have transgender rights. But now increasingly, you as the individual, you Pete, you Abby, have to, in your soul, believe that you have to make the cake that Caitlyn Jenner was always a woman, was never Bruce. You have to, as a Christian organization, allow an active bisexual to be your Christian
club
president.
Well, that's right. It's political correctness. It goes from acceptance to conformity to celebration, and if you don't accept it, then you're wrong, and that's where speech and freedom of association ends.
usage and data rates may apply.
Remembering when to change your fridge filter is a hassle. Remembering the right filter is almost impossible. So at Filters Fast, we have some good advice. Forget it. Instead, remember this. Text BEST 33 to 443-443 and check fridge filters off your to-do list forever. Get it all taken care of for a fraction of big box store prices with a Filters Fast brand filter. To see how much you can save, plus get free shipping, text BEST 33 to 443-443. With a huge range of brand name filters available, Filters Fast is America's number one online filtration company. And you can get a Filters Fast brand filter for a fraction of the price, delivered to your door every time you need it. No need to remember. It's not a matter of if you need a fridge filter. Why not text to get it taken care of? To see how much you can save and get free shipping, text BEST 33 to 443-443. That's BEST 33 to 443-443.
Bill Martinez. It's Bill Martinez live.
The top of the hour, Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. It is all right there. You know, Christianity could have easily become the forgotten sect of Judaism. Instead, it spread at a mind-boggling pace, converting some 30 million people in just four centuries. This is something that has been quite pondersome for our next guest, Bart Ehrman, New York Times bestselling authority on early Christianity. Bart, this is been something that's been running through your mind now for over 30 years, is that how could Christianity spread so quickly?
Well, it's an amazing story. According to the New Testament, right after Jesus' death, there were 11 of his men disciples and a handful of women, so about 20 people who came to believe he got raised from the dead. These were lower class, illiterate peasants from a rural part of a remote area of the empire, and these 20 people convinced so many others that within 400 years, Christianity had become the official religion of the entire Roman Empire, with half of the population, 30 million people, subscribing to it. And so, yeah, it's an astounding story.
Well, when you think about it, even up on that final day, 40 days after Jesus' departure, when you had Pentecost, I'm kind of fast-forwarding here a little bit, you had some over 280 people in that room. So there was still, you know, as they were going through the shock of their leader being crucified, then it was, okay, you know, pulling things back, you know, back together and laying their lives on a line in such a way that it had to be a bit compelling for those near what was happening here.
Well, what I argue in the book is that without the belief in the resurrection, you never would have had Christianity, because Jesus himself was a Jewish teacher who followed the Jewish law and kept Jewish customs, and he understood himself to have the right understanding of the God of the Jews. And if his followers hadn't come to believe in the resurrection, they would have remained a sect within Judaism. They'd be a kind of Judaism, but it's the belief in the resurrection soon after his death that ends up making this into the kind of religion that it became.
Exactly. Bart Ehrman is with us, New York Times bestselling authority on early Christianity. We're talking about his new book, The Triumph of Christianity. And as you say, Bart, Jesus was Jewish. I mean, he knew all the traditions. He knew the Old Testament, referenced it many times throughout his ministry.
Well, that's right. And so, you know, I don't think that Jesus himself was planning on starting a new religion. And I think his followers, after his death, understood that they understood him to be the Jewish Messiah, sent from the Jewish God to the Jewish people in fulfillment of the Jewish scriptures. If you want to be a follower of Jesus, you got to be Jewish, which meant that if anybody converted to be a follower of Jesus, if they were a man, if they weren't Jewish already, they had to get circumcised, and they had to start observing the Sabbath and keeping kosher. And so this started out as a kind of Judaism.
And then, of course, you've got the divide, as you do throughout the history history of Christianity is you get those points of conflict that occur between, you know, the reigning institution of the time, the Pharisees and Sadducees, the religious leaders, and believing that there was no way that Jesus was the Messiah, because in their own mind, they thought Jesus should be able, you know, be a different type of king, more of a worldly king than a spiritual king. Is that not true?
Well, that's right. I mean, there were a variety of understandings of what the Messiah would be within Judaism, but all of these various understandings thought that the Messiah would be a figure of grandeur and power. He'd be someone who destroyed the enemies and set up Israel as a sovereign state in the land and would rule Israel as the king in Jerusalem. And then the Christians came along and said that Jesus is the Messiah. Mm-hmm. Most Jews thought this was crazy because everyone knew Jesus had been arrested for crimes against the state. He had been humiliated and he'd been publicly tortured to death. And so he was just the opposite of what people thought a Messiah would be. So that the Christian claims about Jesus not just fell on deaf ears, but it was understood to be ludicrous by most Jews at the time.
Exactly. And, of course, then what follows is... you know, Rome targeting the Jews, burns down the temple, then targets, you know, the Way, the group of the Way, this new religious movement. They're lighting them up as human torches on Nero's driveway, and you've got Nero's circus and all that taking place as well. So is it any wonder that Christianity could survive in the early years with that kind of persecution?
Well, so I have a chapter on persecution in the book, and you know, there were times and places where Christians were severely persecuted, including during that one incident in Rome under Nero, about 35 years after Jesus' death. One of the things about the persecutions is that the persecutions early on were sporadic and occasional. It wasn't illegal to be a Christian in most parts of the empire. It was perfectly fine, but there were times and places where Roman authorities said, no, you have to worship the Roman gods. You can worship your god if you want to, but you have to also worship our gods, because our gods have made our state great, so that if you don't worship our gods, it's a kind of a political statement. And so there were times when Christians were persecuted, but it didn't halt the growth of the Christian movement.
And then what was the pivotal change for Christianity historically that really caused it to expand exponentially?
Yeah, I would say there are several causes, but when I went into writing the book, my first idea was the one that I think most people have, which is that the reason Christianity took off was because the Emperor Constantine converted. Mm-hmm. In the early 4th century, Constantine was the emperor. He was a pagan, worshipped many gods, and he became a Christian. And I had always thought, well, that's what made the difference. What I try to show in the book is that that turns out probably not to be true, that at the rate Christianity was growing at the time, it almost certainly would have taken over the empire anyway, whether Constantine converted or not. Mm-hmm. It's not that you need massive conversions and you don't need the Emperor Constantine. What you need are Christians converting others at a fairly steady rate of growth.
Right. What was it about Christianity that, you know, drew people in? I mean, throughout all the persecutions, the philosophical conflicts of whether or not Jesus was man or God or both, what was it that transcended all that and drew people into, you know, belief and following Christianity?
What I argue in the book is that to understand why pagans would want to convert to Christianity, you have to understand why pagans were religious in the first place. Mm-hmm. Pagans were religious, well, for a range of reasons, but mainly it was because life was so hard and they needed help to survive it. Most people were not religious because of an afterlife. They were religious because this life was so difficult to survive. So, I mean, they were living in a world where if it doesn't rain this year, your village will starve to death next year.
Right.
If you get sick, there's no way to get well. If you get a tooth abscess, it will kill you. The gods can provide things that humans can't provide for themselves. They can make sure it rains. They can make sure the crops grow and the livestock multiply. They can heal the sick. So the gods are worshipped in order to provide divine benefits, and the Christians argued that their God was more powerful than the pagan gods.
Exactly.
They didn't have to convince masses of people at once, but they convinced some people, and eventually then they took over the empire.
He's New York Times bestselling author Bart Ehrman. His new book, Triumph of Christianity, that is the topic of our discussion. It will continue right after this.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now, and as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help, so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
You have been lied to, generation after generation, time after time after time.
If you follow the money, then you understand why America's in the condition it's in.
Now, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror, and now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie.
This book will open people's eyes. Pre-order now at KillingUncleSamBook.com. KillingUncleSamBook.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Still I am a soul on fire.
Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez, live.
Back with the New York Times best-selling
author Bart Ehrman is with us. We're talking about his brand new book, Triumph of Christianity. Bart, did you find that, you know, we were talking about pagans, you know, in their conversion to Christianity. But do we get back down to the basis that people are going to worship something? It's in our innate behavior to worship a god of some sort?
Certainly in the ancient world, there were virtually no atheists. Everybody knew that there were gods, lots of gods. The only ones who didn't think there were lots of gods were Jews and then Christians, and so everybody knew there were lots of gods. What made it interesting in the ancient world was that since everybody worshipped many gods, there was no sense that one religion was right and the others were wrong. That a variety of religions could be right. And so if you started adapting new religious practices, you didn't have to give up your old practices. Mm-hmm. Or if you started worshiping a new god, you didn't have to stop worshiping the old gods until Christianity came along. Christians said, we're right. There's only one God. You can only worship him. If you turn to this God, you can't worship any of the others. And that's one of the reasons Christianity ended up taking over the empire, mm-hmm. because it was the only religion that was destroying the other religions in its wake, because it was the only religion that was pressing its exclusivistic claims.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the reason, you know, when you think about Christianity taking over the Roman Empire, that's why it mattered so much, right?
Well, it is. I mean, what ends up happening is Christianity is not growing by leaps and bounds at first. It just is growing at, you know, the converted few people here and there. Probably at about a rate, I tried to show in the book, it's probably at about a rate about 3% a year. Mm-hmm. So if there are 100 people who are Christian this year, next year there may be 103. You do that over time, and since you're an exclusive religion, you're not only bringing people into Christianity, you're taking them away from paganism. Mm-hmm. And that means that over time, Christianity is advancing while the other religions are shrinking.
And then you also have, lest we forget, Judaism. And so this divide between Judaism and Christianity to become different religions, it was all about Jesus, right? Whether they were going to accept Jesus or not. Was that the divide?
Yeah, that was the initial divide, is that Christians were saying that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, and Jews were saying there's no way he could be the Messiah. He's a crucified criminal. And so that brought about the divide originally, and then they developed in different lines. I mean, Christianity becomes a Gentile religion, a religion open to non-Jews who didn't have to convert to Judaism. And before the end of the first century was over, most of the people coming into Christianity came from pagan roots rather than Jewish roots.
Now, were there other things that were contributory to people's conversion here? I mean, not only some spiritual satisfaction becoming a Christian, but was there something beneficial in terms of the culture that Christianity was demonstrating versus the other religions?
There have been a lot of discussion about this among scholars. Some scholars have thought that, for example, that the idea of the Christian community was attractive to people, that within the Christian church, unlike in pagan religions, people met every week, and they called one another brother and sister, and they supported each other, and they prayed for each other, and they shared their resources, and that the community aspect might have brought people in, and that's possible. It is striking that when you read what the sources actually say, from starting with the New Testament, but going up through the second, third, fourth centuries, what they say is that what's converting people are demonstrations of divine power, the miracles that people are working in the name of the God of Jesus, and that's the main thing leading to conversions.
No doubt, miracles and wonders continued post the resurrection, as you said earlier. That was, in fact, the ultimate miracle. If you could obliterate, the fact that the resurrection did not occur. We know Josh McDowell tried to do that, and in the process of trying to convince himself the resurrection factor was a lie, as a result in trying to prove it was a lie, he started believing.
Well, you know, the early Christians didn't use the kind of proofs of the resurrection that someone like Josh McDowell would do. What they would say was that, look, Jesus died, and Paul saw him alive afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was raised from the dead. And they didn't convince masses of people. They only had to convince a few people. Mm-hmm. But over time, if you convince a few people and these people have to leave their old religion to accept this religion, then the other religion starts failing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it ended up happening. But it absolutely is because of belief that Jesus really was raised from the dead.
Well, not only Paul, but after his resurrection, there were reports that hundreds of people saw Jesus in various places, did they not?
Well, in the Gospels, you don't have hundreds of people seeing Jesus. You have the followers of Jesus seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, in one place in 1 Corinthians, mentions that there were 500 people who saw him at once, but he doesn't give us any information about that.
That's what I'm referring to.
The
right.
Records for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but obviously, no doubt, people having, you know, either seen Jesus afterwards, you know, going in and seeing a tomb that was before sealed up. And, of course, as we know, according to Roman law, that those guards were going to be subject to death because they lost the body of Jesus Christ. And, of course, the ruling religious leaders at the time knew of Jesus's prediction or his prophecy that he would be raised in 3 days, and they were afraid that maybe his followers would steal the body and promote a big hoax upon you know, the Jewish people and the world.
Well, that's what the Gospel of Matthew says. So, you know, one of the tasks that biblical scholars have is determining how accurate these accounts are. I mean, are they literally what happened, or are they later reflections some decades later? And so it's a very interesting question. You don't get the guards posted at the tomb, for example, in any of the other Gospels, or the idea that the disciples may have stolen the body. It all comes from the Gospel of Matthew, which is, of course, written about 50 or 60 years after the events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about the Gospels, written, I mean, that was about the closest contact to the resurrection of Christ, his ministry, in terms of documented history, correct?
Well, the Gospels are the only accounts we have of Jesus rising from the dead and the tomb being empty. Paul himself doesn't say anything about an empty tomb, and these are the only narratives that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're written, you know, many decades later by people who are not living in Palestine. I mean, the authors of the Gospels are Greek-speaking Christians living decades later. No suggestion that they actually lived in Israel. They're actually writing in a different language from Jesus and his disciples, and so they're decades later by people who weren't there, and so that's why biblical scholars have to wrestle with trying to figure out what actually happened.
Well, Bart, for 30 years, you've been mulling this question of Christianity in your head, and I'm sure you were up many times at 3 o'clock in the morning pondering the question. Now that you've written The Triumph of Christianity, can you sleep through the night?
I sleep just well. I sleep perfectly well, and I actually never lost any sleep over this one. This is a story for me that is historically extremely important, but it's not one that I puzzle about much. I think we understand now how it all happened.
Yeah, exactly. So the big takeaway for the people that get their hands on your book, and they should get their hands on your book. This is great scholarship, and you know, I appreciate all the hard work that you put into this in The Triumph of Christianity. What do you want the audience to get from your book?
I think people need to realize that when Christianity took over the Roman world, it became the religion of the West, which means it became the religion, the dominant religion of all of Western civilization. And our entire culture cannot be understood apart from the Christian influence, whether you're a Christian or not. And so seeing how Christianity actually did it makes a huge difference for understanding our own heritage.
Well, Bart Ehrman, thank you again for being with us here on Bill Martinez Live, New York Times bestselling authority on early Christianity. Bart Ehrman on Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Bart.
Thank you.
Money, 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 money. You gotta have it.
When you need it, what do?
If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 888-794-1645. 888-794-1645. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 888-794-1645. 888-794-1645. 888-794-1645. That's 888-794-1645. NMLS number 1136.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-301-5435. That's 800-301-5435. 800-301-5435.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
We the people. Listen to Bill Martinez live. It's about time someone had the courage to say it.
Oh,
you're forever mine. You will never run away. You're by my side.
Keeping the spirit of Don't Tread on Me alive. Bill Martinez, live.
You will never run
away. Hey, we're doing the best we can to keep it alive. I know sometimes you probably think it's on life support, but I still have faith in the American people, and I have faith in our Constitution, which gives us the basis for that faith. Hey, look, it's up to us. If we're going to continue to subordinate our position, well, then we'll continue to deal with the Congress that we deal with. Jenny Beth Martin is with us, president and founder of the Tea Party Patriots. Jenny Beth, how you doing?
I am great. It's so good to be back with you.
Hey, always good to be talking to you. I loved your analysis and opinion in the Washington Times. Mitch McConnell really indicted himself, and you quoted him in saying there's no education in the second kick of a mule. Well, the Congress keeps getting, and the Senate particularly, keeps getting kicked by that mule over and over again. So maybe by his own declaration, he is not serving the people any longer, because the mule is just just, you know, I don't know if you want to say that Mueller is having target practice or he's just waiting for Mitch McConnell to get the heck out of the way.
You're absolutely right. We really do, though. We need Mitch McConnell out of the way. I don't think that's going to happen right now. We've called for it with Tea Party Patriot Citizens Fund. But a way to help us get to that point is to elect more people who support our values, the Tea Party values, the conservative values that are based on constitutionally limited government. And it's clear we don't have enough of those kind of people in Congress. And we have to work to get more people who want to rein in spending, want to rein in the size and scope of government, elected.
Yeah. Well, we need to keep sending people in and understand that this is an ongoing dynamic process because we're fighting a system that's well-oiled. I've been watching closely because we're going to be talking with Tim Scott, Senator Tim Scott, and Congressman Trey Gowdy on their new book called Unified, Jenny Beth. And I was kind of sad in part to hear of Trey Gowdy's assessment, saying that he's just not good as a legislator. But he saw himself having more success as a prosecutor, and I can understand why, because things move so slow. He's fighting a system that doesn't give people who want to do the right thing on behalf of the people, it doesn't provide the right results. The system right now is rigged, and I think that's what he's saying, but that's sad because, you know, you've got somebody as talented as Trey Gowdy, who came in, as you know, with the Tea Party wave, and so he's been frustrated to the point to where he's leaving Congress and thinking that he really didn't do a good job. And I think that for all things considered, the era that he was in, he was brilliant. I mean, we're going to miss him like we miss Tom Coburn.
We will miss him, and he is certainly a fighter, and he's been able to go after people in the interviews that he's done within the committee that he's been a part of, exposing the issues that we had, especially with the Obama administration. We will miss Trey Gowdy, and I don't think that we've seen the last of him. I think he will continue to do a lot of great things for our country. But it means also that we've got to make sure that we're working to get people who replace him and in the other open seats across the country, whether the Republican who is retiring is more conservative-leaning or more moderate-leaning, we have to get people who are elected who share our values. And that's one of the challenges that we have over the next several months as the primary season really heats up.
Well, again, we remind not only Congress, but we remind we the people of what the Tea Party Patriots is all about and the promises that Republicans made to us. And we've got to hold their feet to the fire. We've got to hold them accountable. And, and it may take more waves of conservatives coming in, fighting the system before they get it that, we want a smaller government. We want a responsible government, and what they gave us with this last spending bill, I'm tired, as you are, Jenny Beth, of hearing, well, we had to do this because of the military. We had to do this for whatever other, conservative reason to try to make it palpable. No, this thing really stinks, and I'm disappointed, just as you are, that Donald Trump went ahead and signed it, even though after the fact he's going, well, I'm telling you now, this is the last time I'll do it. There doesn't need to be the warning. You just do it, right?
Yes, and that is absolutely correct. You're absolutely right there. We have to continue to just go and get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Well, they need to understand it's all about fiscal responsibility, as you've been saying, again, Jenny Beth, time and time again. But again, I want people to understand this is the process, and that we're fighting a long-established bureaucratic system that operates by its own rules. You know, you go, you lie to the people, you get the vote, you come in, you make $180,000 a year, and if you're lucky, you can leverage that to millions, and everybody thinks you're all that in a bag of chips because you're in an honored position as a congressman or a senator. But at the end of the day, we need to measure these people, say, how have you done by way of your promises? And again, we've got to storm we've got to storm the ballot box in such a way to where we get conservatives, you know, and, you know, elected and to Washington, that eventually just by sheer numbers and maybe the repetition of us electing conservatives, to the body, that, the rest of our government will understand, well, gosh darn it, you know, Main Street America is really serious about having a fiscally responsible government. What do you think?
I think that you're exactly right. And we do, what you just said about storming the ballot box is absolutely right. We have to do that. And we have to do it, you know, before I got on this interview, I was reaching out to people and talking about what we have to do in the next several months. We have to be engaged and volunteer. We've got to help the people who are conservative get elected. If you aren't in an area where there's a swing state, a swing district or a Senate seat at stake, then you have to, in the fall, work in your local area getting conservatives elected, and then also volunteer to help in other parts of the country. The left is geared up. They are organized. They are working very hard. They've found issues that they can campaign for, not just being anti-Trump and resisting the president. They're now going to do everything they can to campaign for gun control, which means a loss of our Second Amendment rights. They're against the Second Amendment, but they're couching it in a way that makes it seem like they're for something. And we have to make sure that we do everything that we can, not just to rein in the out-of-control spending, but also to make sure that the left doesn't come in and take more and more of our rights away and grow the government even bigger than it already is today. We have a lot at stake this fall, as we do every single election, but that's the way it works in a representative democracy. Our work is never done.
Exactly. And progressives have understood this. I mean, this is what progressives are all about. They just keep moving the ball forward. And they'll take as much ground as we give them. And we've given them this much. And look what's happened. I mean, but for conservatives and people of faith, the 2016 election would have been altogether different. And you and I would not be having this conversation. So we have a chance to secure these beachheads that we've been able to secure. But it's up to we the people. And Jenny Beth, again, I've been bragging about you and what the Tea Party Patriots has been doing in terms of activating the citizenry. You've made it easy for people to get involved. I mean, you can sit around and complain all you want, but it really takes, at this point, it takes an effort that matches the effort that progressives are doing out there. Like you said, they are, they're fairly well organized, and they've been doing a good job, and they've been gaining ground here. But they need to understand that conservatives are fighting back, and we're getting educated.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-359-3360.
There's a place for answers. A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-359-3360. That's 1-800-359-3360.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
Healthcare reform is confusing, but whether it's finding an affordable insurance plan, keeping your doctor, or being able to afford needed prescriptions, navigating the healthcare system has become a challenge. Control your own healthcare costs and choices with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It is an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share the cost of each other's medical needs. Neighbor helping neighbor. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
See why our homegrown small business at sunny-bay.com has tried to help people just like you. Get your Sunny Bay heating pads at sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com or call 253-678-1361. For hot and cold therapy, sunny-bay.com.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to faketv.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and Fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. faketv.com.
You didn't think they'd get away with it, did you?
Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, it's the way you like us, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific, and independent as well. Last week, the Chicago Tribune reported that a group of former pastors and staff members had accused megachurch pastor Billy Hybels of sexual harassment and misconduct. The best-selling author and founder of one of America's largest churches denied all of the allegations, but Bill Hybels wasn't the only pastor in the news last week. Andy Savage, the Memphis pastor, who was met with applause after disclosing a decades-old assault on a teen in his former youth group, resigned last Tuesday. Although High Point Church's investigation didn't uncover further abuse, the leadership agreed that his resignation was appropriate. Well, in the wake of hashtag MeToo and the sexual assault crisis, how should churches respond to allegations of sexual misconduct within their own ranks? With us right now is a former pastor, a licensed professional counselor, sexual recovery therapist with focus on the family. He's been doing this for over 30 years, Dr. John Thornton. Dr. John, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Well, thanks, Bill. It's good to be here today.
Hey, good to have you here to talk about this pervasive topic. I mean, we're told to be in the world, not of the world. But the church is not immune from dealing with this hashtag MeToo movement. And I know your sensitivity is much like mine, is that when, the door is opened up here, we've got to be a bit cautious and discerning, because there's a lot of emotions behind this hashtag MeToo movement.
There definitely is, Bill. I think what's really a rallying call, I think, to all of us that are in church leadership and even the Christian community, to make sure that we're on the proactive side of this. There are some really important steps that we could actually take that would prevent us from even getting into these extremely difficult and painful circumstances. I would certainly recommend to your listeners out there who are in a leadership role to encourage their churches to have a written policy and to address these issues beforehand. Mm-hmm. And to do all that we can to call our pastors to have accountability. I know one of the things I see so often when pastors are falling these days is that they have failed to have an accountability person or persons in their life where they can have that support, encouragement, and prayer. And as most people probably would recognize, being a pastor is a tough thing. Yeah. But pastors do have a very important responsibility to actually exercise good self-care and to have that accountability in place.
Well, I agree that there needs to be a policy, and that's been part of the problem, that this hasn't been thought out, how to deal with it. I mean, the Catholic Church has had their issues over the years and probably thought when initially started breaking out, maybe we can kind of deal with this in-house. The problem was much more comprehensive than their plan to deal with it. And, of course, this came out years later. And here we are in the Protestant churches dealing with it again. And I think before we get into policy, maybe we just need to get into that, prone position before God, asking for forgiveness and saying, you know, where have we failed? What have we done? And seek God's face on this. To get his wisdom, because we need to address this right off the bat, and the sooner the better. And I know that in dealing with any kind of sin, it's very, very difficult. It's easy for us, you know, to talk about it in the sense that we're not the one whose family is going to be directly affected by this, or church following, or, you know, careers and that sort of thing. But this is where we need to represent the grace and healing power of God, oh, yes, on the wake of another Easter that we just celebrated.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Bill. I think, you know, one of the difficult things about the Willow Creek situation is that the elders actually did a thorough investigation, and then there was another independent person who came in, a lawyer, and he did his investigation, and both of those parties have indicated that there was not evidence of any impropriety, and yet still the allegations keep coming forward. I'm with you. I think we have to be extremely careful. I was thinking of Mother Teresa the other day, a statement she made many years ago. If you judge people, you don't have time to love them. And I think we really need to be very cautious in these situations to protect the dignity of Bill, his family, and also the church.
Exactly. Well, as you say, and I agree with you, that this is a tough topic, but it's one that needs to be confronted, especially in light of all these years. We don't even know, John, to what degree, how many women previously have been abused, whether it's at work or whatever workplace. I mean, we know that it's pervasive. This has been going on in certain industries. I mean, even now, I mean, politically, we still have in Congress, there are some legislators that are still walking around that were part of a $17 million settlement that we don't know about yet. And they're kind of, you know, hiding. I mean, we've had a couple of legislators, John Conyers and Al Franken, that were exposed and those issues resolved. But what about the others that are yet to be resolved? And, you know, again, I'm reminded of the book of Ecclesiastes that says that because we do not confront sin immediately, it just kind of snowballs, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think your point is to be well taken. I mean, when these kinds of allegations come forth, churches really need to be prepared to handle that and to give immediate attention and not to take it lightly or to disregard it. In the case with Andy Savage, I'm going to commend him for at least acknowledging that his wrongdoing years ago. But if you go back and look at the story, there were some grievous errors made back those many years ago. For example, even the senior pastor at that time trying to cover that up, and then this poor woman who has been suffering for years under a tremendous burden and not being able to get the help that she needed. So we really can learn from these mistakes, I hope, and try to establish these policies that are going to protect the victim as well.
And as you say, we have to sincerely approach these issues. Sin is sin. Let's confront it. Let's allow healing to take place. I mean, for this woman who, as you say, has been carrying this burden that has affected her purpose, her holy purpose in life. Boy, this is brutal. I mean, your heart breaks for her. And even for Andy, here it is, he's having to deal with this reality. And again, to the point of the book of Ecclesiastes, is that it's much more complicated. It reminds me of that Pennzoil commercial, John, that said, you can pay me now or pay me later. The inference was, is if you paid now, it might be a little bit expensive, but later, much more expensive, right? And this is the way, this is an opportunity, I think, for all of us, because, as you said, we've been dealing with this over the years. It just wasn't Harvey Weinstein. I mean, a lot of people, because it's so horrific, and we just don't want to, I don't know if it's just that we just don't want to think about it, the embarrassment, all that goes on, but my goodness, the damage that is created as a result of this is just so massive. And I guess in some sense we can be grateful for Harvey Weinstein and the hashtag MeToo movement, because you know, God finally said, it's enough of this stuff. You know, let's deal with this. Let's put it all out and let's see how my people address this. And here is a chance for the church to really take the lead and represent God's grace, his mercy and redemption, right?
Absolutely. And I was just thinking about, and most of your listeners know, Billy Graham passed away recently. And what they may not know was many years ago, there was a friend of his who was in a high position of authority, and this person fell just because of the appearance of impropriety. And Billy Graham determined as a very young man that he was going to have those boundaries well established. And we sure could learn from men like him and prevent a lot of harm being done to innocent people and even to the cause in the name of Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Well, Mike Pence was made fun of, and what he employed and believed in was the Billy Graham principle in terms of not in terms of, as you say, avoiding all appearance of evil. Not even, you know, today it's very casual. You just have dinner with another woman other than your wife. No big deal. But Mike Pence brought it back into the discussion. Yes, the women from The View and, you know, the cultural crusaders of today made fun of him. But I got to tell you, there's a lot of women around this country saying right on. And even men who have fallen and gotten themselves in trouble going, you know, Mike Pence, I'm sure glad you brought that up, because that reminded me. Our audience knows that I was honored to work with the Billy Graham Crusade in the mid 80s in Los Angeles in Southern California at Anaheim. And that was one of the key principles right up the bat. You didn't cross counsel. You never closed the door. You didn't even get in an elevator with somebody in the opposite side. You were never in a position of privacy with somebody other than your wife in those kind of moments that could even be suggested. You avoided all appearance of evil. And so that stayed with me and has stayed with me since. I thought that that was just awesome counsel.
Yeah, got a lot of respect for Mike Pence and his family. And if you know him at all, what a strong marriage he has and a tremendous legacy in his family and impact that I think is even national just because of that stand he's taken.
I mean, what married couple wouldn't want you know, the relationship that the Pences have? I mean, it's quite the example. I mean, I'm not trying to put him up on a pinnacle, but, you know, with all the things that we hear about in our media and the culture and, you know, TV, movies and all that sort of thing, it's quite refreshing to have somebody in a position as the Vice President of the United States honoring his wife the way he is. And it's like, you know, and yes, you get some of these knucklehead pundits that just make fun. You just go, how sad, you know?
Yeah, it really is sad. I don't know about you, Bill. I've been married 41 years, and I've been trying to follow the Billy Graham rule myself, and it has been such a tremendous help and inspiration. And
yeah.
Pence is just a stalwart guy. Wow.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Dr. John Thorington from Focus on the Family has been with us. John, as we wrap things up here in the last 30 seconds, you know, what do you want to see ultimately for the church here to do? What's your summary here on this?
Yeah, again, just really be prepared. Look at this issue carefully. For the sake of the church, but also there are people that have been wounded, and we certainly need to stand there and to be there for them. If your church is trying to come together and have a policy and wants some help with that, I definitely want to encourage your listeners to give us a call here at Focus on the Family. We have pastoral counselors who do that kind of thing on a regular basis. There's no charge for the consultation. If they were to call us at 855-771-4357, we would be glad to help.
Bitcoin is losing crypto market share to other digital currencies. Bitcoin's astronomical rise has led to the creation of numerous competitors like Ethereum, Ripple, and Litecoin, which have also seen massive gains in value. According to Quartz, Bitcoin made up 85% of the crypto market 1 year ago, and today it has fallen to 36%. Remember, the only way to win in the casino is to take chips off the table. Call Miles Franklin at 866-485-4346 and let us show you how to quickly turn your Bitcoin into the 5,000-year-old safety of precious metals. Miles Franklin can quickly convert your Bitcoin to precious metals with one phone call at 866-485-4346. That's Miles Franklin celebrating our 29th year in business without ever receiving a customer complaint. Call us at 866-485-4346. Fast, easy, safe, and convert your Bitcoin into gold with one phone call.
Has your body ever...